This podcast was recorded in October 2016, when we were thinking a lot about supervision.
Welcome to Helpful Social Work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you learn, think and act with integrity so that people who need social work get the help that will transform their lives. I'm Jo.
And I'm Jerry, and in this podcast we're going to continue to look at how we relate to colleagues at work. This time we're going to be looking at emotional containment and support, which we think is pretty important since social work is emotional work and complex work, and it's very difficult to do that on your own. And it's unhelpful, I think, for children, adults and families if we're working without support ourselves. So what we hope for is that our work relationships will provide us with the kind of support and insight that we need. So we're going to talk a bit about how they can function well, as this is a critical element in our confidence and our well-being.
Yeah, and I guess it would be helpful if we had a few examples of what that looks like. And for me, because of the type of person I am, if when I'm under stress and pressure, I'm going to get louder and more impulsive, because they're the areas that I really need to learn how to manage. And so the type of manager that is good for me is a manager who's actively containing and almost constraining those type of impulses. And I was very lucky for many years to have a manager who was great at doing that. And one of the things he did for me, which was really, really helpful, because there were times when I really needed to sound off so that I could manage how I was going to kind of go on in a more in a better and more thoughtful way. And what he did was he used to say to me, look, I can sense you're really frustrated here. Before you call anybody, before you write any emails to anyone, before you speak and regret it, just send me an email with all the things that are bothering you in it. And I would send this email and I would just really let myself go about how frustrated I was and blah, blah, blah. And I would send it to him and he would send me back this little response which went read, noted, deleted. And it was really, really helpful actually, because he didn't feed into it, but I knew that he'd actually heard it. He deleted it, which meant that I felt safe to have that rant to him. He didn't feel as if he needed to act on it, but it took all the heat out of it for me. For me, very containing, very constructive, and allowed me to have proper challenging conversations that were helpful to both parties.
Yeah, and for me, I'm a little different. So for me, if I am struggling emotionally or there's a lot of things going on, I tend to get quieter and more withdrawn and get more immersed in my work. So I've always needed or hoped to have supervisors that would draw the emotions out of me and ask me how I'm feeling and actually get me to talk about things. And as a manager myself, one of the things I learned was that that response of calmness can be overdone. So there's a big difference between mirroring emotions and recognising them and containing them. And the thing that I was accused of doing rightly by one of my supervisees, which was being too calm and not caring about things. So seeming as if there's no emotional response at all. So it's kind of getting the balance right, isn't it? It's responding with your emotions but not escalating things.
And I think that the fact that we've been able to talk about different things that are important to us highlights the role of emotional intelligence in support. Because actually the best support will be tailored to your own emotional needs. And that comes both from you understanding what your needs are and also the other person, you know, paying attention to both how we and others feel. But Goleman identifies this work and where he talks about the five areas of emotional intelligence, and he talks about us being able to motivate ourselves and persist in the face of frustrations, control impulse and delay gratification. They were the things that I was talking about that I was struggling with. Regulate our moods and to keep distress from swamping our ability to think. It also helps us to empathise with others and remain hopeful. This is so important because in our working environments where there's lots of uncertainty and we're very close to each other, we catch emotions. We experience secondary trauma when we witness people's distress, and we need to be able to recognise that acknowledge it, and then use our emotional intelligence to manage it. I really think that emotional intelligence is an essential capacity in social work because it's how the work's done, through relationships. And David Howe argues that when we try to do these tasks without emotional intelligence, we make superficial responses and they follow procedure, but they don't engage with people. And then people experience that as unfeeling and the response becomes ineffective.
Which is a bit like what my supervisee was saying, that it seemed that I was unfeeling because yes. I was responding intellectually or with plans rather than with emotional awareness.
And it's still a desire on your part to help. Be helpful, but it wasn't the right type of help, and that's where emotional intelligence allows us to kind of fine-tune ourselves and realize, okay, I need to be different with this person. Once we're kind of in a place where we feel the other person isn't being authentic to us for whatever reason, it makes it very hard for us to then take their help and to use it usefully. And it also really damages the relationship. And at the end of the day, emotional intelligence allows you to build the relationships you need to be able to work well within organisations and well with children and families.
Yeah, and one of the things that we talk about in training is this idea of resonance and dissonance, the idea of emotions being contagious. And
I think we all can think of a team room that we've been in where one person entering it or exiting it can change the environment of that team room. Either one person comes in and everybody's lifted and lightened, or someone comes in and everybody becomes angry or defensive or preoccupied. And it is something we really need to be aware of, how we're affecting our colleagues and how we're supporting our colleagues. And so, you know, keeping our moods, you know, I guess, in the right place and space. I think for me, that is sometimes something that needs help. It's not something that you can just do on your own. You need to be able to seek help with your emotions. And that means that you have to be able to identify what the problems are that are impacting your own performance and well-being. Actually think about what part they're playing in the difficulties and then start to develop strategies and solutions. We also need to be able to work out when the problem's not ours alone to solve, and we need to be able to work out who we go to for support and critical questioning. And that critical questioning means and a willingness to look at ourselves both intellectually and emotionally with a critical eye. I think that you can be helped in kind of looking at your emotions and trying to work out what part they're playing if you've got a manager who is really clear that emotions are information. They're actually helpful to you. They're not something to be dismissed or ignored or to be embarrassed about. And that they understand about secondary trauma and that they're really comfortable with helping people work through how they're feeling. If you don't have someone who can help you do that, I think actually uncontained emotions can become destructive and traumatic. The manager has really got a key role here. They've really got to promote good resonance within their team, and that means that they've got to be able to manage their own frustrations and how they're feeling appropriately and really model that at all times. And I know that one of the things, Jerry, is we kind of keep coming back to all these things managers should be. And I kind of look back at my time managing and I think there were times when I didn't do that. But when you don't, it's really unhelpful, actually. And if you see a team that's in distress or dysfunctioning, look to how their manager is behaving, because often there's a correlation. Yeah. If you've got a whole team approach, you know, the manager's really trying to contain and hold. We really want them to be vigilant about their own emotional energy, tolerate strong emotions, and reach out to help those that are experiencing them. And Smith found that social workers who had experienced fear wanted a manager who would not just do something, but would actually stand there and let that happen. And this provides staff with a safe, strong base so that they can actually go out and be more helpful to people and tolerate people's distress and strong emotions.
Yes, we wanted to talk a bit about colleague support and what that should look like, or what ideally will look like. So it's not the same as parenting or nurturing. It's interesting in training, sometimes managers talk about the parallels between being a manager and being a parent. And some social workers, I think, can feel like that with their colleagues. But I don't think that's helpful unless you think of it as the way that you might support a young person to develop by having an adult-to-adult relationship with them, by modelling that so that they can learn and reflect it. Because adult-to-adult is what we're looking for. So looking for authoritative support that isn't about making it all better or pretending that everything's okay, but is about exchanging expertise so that both parties can grow. And that needs regular discussion to build trust, honest, open discussion, and it doesn't deny power imbalances but works with these. So it recognises that people are coming from different places and have different things to offer, but that everything that people bring is valuable. And through being curious about each other and being reflective and sharing feelings and analysis of that, learning together, adults develop their practice effectively. And there's lots of different ways of providing good support, formal and informal approaches. The main formal one that we'll talk about in a minute is supervision. But there's lots of informal discussions, peer support, learning opportunities that go on in team rooms. And some of the really informal stuff, like making tea together, having a laugh, helping each other out, those are really helpful as well. And the kind of important elements of adult-to-adult support are building a sense of community, looking out for each other's environment, learning together, doing things together, and being generous to each other. And the key concept here is about encouraging each other to value one another and to value the workplace. And that requires us to have some time for colleagues and peers. And this was always something that I struggled with a bit. I wanted to kind of get into the office and get on with my own work. But taking the time to ask people how they are, make them a cup of tea, actually builds the kind of environment which means that when you need support, it's there for you already. You're in practice at offering it.
Yeah, I think that's right, Gerry. Sometimes noise and banter in the office is actually helpful and will actually facilitate better concentration and better work. I mean, I think it's about working out when people need everyone to be quiet and work, and when people need places and spaces that they can actually relate with each other. But just to think it though about how do we receive support, because for me, supervision and mentoring are two of the ways that we, you know, formally and helpfully seek and receive support. And I know a lot of emphasis has been placed on the role of supervision and the need for it to support reflective practice. It's not the only tool in a manager's kit to promote resilience, but it's the one that's most relational. And to me, that mirroring of the working relationship between the social worker and the people they work with is really effective in terms of helping build interpersonal skills such as empathy, emotional intelligence, curiosity, and optimism. As well as that, if the relationship is working well, the supervision will also help to contain anxiety and uncertainty. And if we can be shown how to do that with our supervisor, then we can take that skill out and actually do it with families and children. And that containment of anxiety is just so important. I know that the evidence for the impact of supervision is quite limited, but it does clearly support job satisfaction and reduce stress. Supervisees really value the support, and they value the safe space that supervision provides. Roosh identifies the challenge for managers in supervision is to balance the relational work with the technical work that's needed. And I think that this is a little bit when you were talking before about adult to adult conversations rather than parent, child or counsellor worker people often talk about. It's that idea of being able to help them achieve their tasks in a way that is safe for them and makes them feel good. So the manager uses their emotional intelligence and their relational role to help the worker work their way through and actually come up with the task that's to be achieved. And I think that can also be done really well in group supervision. People can sit together with a topic area or a case or a task and explore all of the emotions and the conundrums in safety and still come out at the end with a, and this is what I now think I can do, so you can achieve that. Mentoring, which I personally have always found invaluable, and I think that it's a good idea to have a mentor where you can, really helps you to gain confidence, it helps you to think differently, and it really increases both the mentor's and the mentorees' work satisfaction.
And it's really important in the supervisory relationship and in peer relationships generally that there's some reciprocity. So going back to what we were saying about the adult-to-adult relationship, that people all contribute and all learn and gain from one another. And that, again, is modelling the kind of approach we'd like to see with the people who need social work. Yeah, so we've talked quite a lot about emotions, emotional intelligence, support, containment, those kind of things. And going back to the purpose of that, it's so that we can be supported in order to go out and be helpful to others. If we're preoccupied, then we'll be much less available and ultimately much less helpful to people. And how we are with colleagues, with supervisors, with supervisees influences the relationships that we're practicing, and that influences how we are with children, adults and families. So we need to see our relationships with colleagues as part of social work practice and see ourselves as part of other people's practice. And when we do have good peers and good managers, good supervisors, then social work is much more possible and it's much more enjoyable as well. Going to work is much more enjoyable. So trying to aspire to those kind of secure and positive relationships is a real motivating factor, I think. What we want to avoid is dysfunctional relationships and behaviours that add to the evidence that people who we're going out to serve might have about how adults behave. And we want to show them something really different. So a couple of reflective points we were going to leave people with. One was, how do we ensure that we have adult-to-adult relationships at work? And also, how do we show our care and our value for others? How do we show other people that we value them, and we value the environment around them?
They sound like very good questions to end on, Gerry.
All right. Thanks very much, Jo.
Okay. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.